your contributions to keep us really going. And we know we rely on you because we know we can. Because KBOO listeners care. That's why you're listening to us. And that's why you're going to call in at 877-500-5266 and give us your pledge of support. Come on, you can do it. 877-500-5266.
Hey there. I just want to say hi, Lynn, and hi, Ken, are very far from chintzy pitchers. You guys are the deluxe pitchers.
And you rock.
So I want to remind our listeners, they are listening to KBOO Portland. We are in the middle of our membership drive, our springtime drive. And up next, we've got Between the Covers. Pamela Santos will welcome Portland author Jenny Forrester, talking about her latest memoir right after this.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Vanport Mosaic Festival, May 26th through the 29th, at various locations throughout North and Northeast Portland. The second annual Vanport Mosaic Festival will offer an exploration of the history and legacy of Vanport through a series of films and plays, lectures and conversations, and guided tours. Audiences will be invited to reflect upon the journeys of those who lived and died in the city of Vanport. As part of the festival, there will be screenings of a selection of Vanport oral histories. Again, that's the Vanport Mosaic Festival, May 26th through the 29th, at various locations throughout North and Northeast Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is Pamela Santos, and you're listening to Between the Covers. Today, we're going to be talking to Jenny Forrester. Her memoir, Narrow River, Wide Sky, was recently published. It's a memoir, her first book. And I'm so pleased to welcome her back to KBOO Radio, where she's been a guest on several other shows here.
Thank you very much for having me here.
Jenny Forrester has been published in a number of print and online publications, including Seattle City Arts Magazine, Nailed Magazine, Hip Mama, The Literary Kitchen, Indiana Review, and Columbia Journal. Her work is included in the Listen to Your Mother anthology, published by Putnam. She curates the Unchaste Readers series, and I would also like to add that I feel like she could pretty much have every other verb in there, and all of them would be doing her no justice. Has birthed the Unchaste Readers, has also midwifed, has taken the reader series through several years now of not only childhood, but just grown it into this big family.
Thank you. Thank you very much. That means everything.
Of course. And this is a very special occasion that I get to talk to her only about herself.
Uh-oh. That'll be really fun.
Yeah, because this is about you. This is about your book.
A lot of people, though, helped me become the author who could write this book, though. So really, it's not just me. But I did sit in that chair by myself. That's true.
And that's the point, right? Mm-hmm. It's about so many, not just hours. This is years.
Yes. 20 altogether.
Yes.
Yeah, so it wasn't that I was writing this exact book for 20 years. It's that I had to learn to be a writer. It's that I had to accumulate all of the stories. It's that I had to stitch things together. And then in the end, I had to become the person who could tell this story from an analyzed place and from an empowered place and from an empowering place, because there's a lot of content in here that's that could be presented in a really unkind, unanalyzed way.
And you say this, there's a line in the book, it actually made me think of this right now. There's a lot of heart and mind in this. And it brought me back to how your mother taught you caution, but you learned to put compassion and caution together.
Oh, nice. I like that. So that particular passage, yes, went through many iterations because, like, the first time I told it, I'm sure I wouldn't want you to read it. And because of the way that it happened and who we were and what the situation was then and et cetera. But I didn't want it. I couldn't let it sit on the page like that. And actually crafting that so that it was realistic to the period, to who we were, in the period of us, I mean. Then trying to figure out how to analyze that without stepping in too much to the story, into the scene, as, you know, Jenny from Portland, Oregon.
No, it seems a lot like you're still writing Jenny
mm-hmm.
into this book as much as being Jenny.
Yes.
When you're writing it at the same time.
Right. So I learned a lot about the difference between the person, the writer, the author, and the narrator. That, for me, has been the most powerful writing tool that I could wield to write this.
And I think this is actually a perfect opportunity for us to hear a bit from the book and to hear your voice in this.
Okay. I'll just start from the beginning. And it starts out with book one, Children of a Narrow River, and chapter one, The Narrow River. My brother and I stood near the top of a sloping western Colorado cemetery among the ghosts of pioneers with their upright gravestones on one side and the more recent ghosts on the other, their earthen beds marked with the metal stakes of the impoverished, considering where we should bury our mother, taken from us suddenly. We were in our 20s and not ready, not that anyone ever is. Our sweet mother, her skin of rose cream and cold calloused hands, her warm soft heart, a cup of tea in a coffee place. Brian pointed toward Harge Gravel Mountain away from the coffee-colored hills above the Eagle River. We looked at it from her future perspective, and we didn't like the narrowness of it. She liked expanses, the wider view. She'd suffered narrowness long enough. He walked to another spot and said, "This is good. She can see New York Mountain from here." He turned his back, armored, facing away up over what most people would call mountains, being born children at high altitude. "I don't know if this is the place. I wanted more time to make the right decision, permanent as it was." The grave digger awaiting our decision for our mother's resting place moved from foot to foot, his strong arms across his wide chest, and said, "There's no room for anyone beside her." "She wasn't married," we said, too much at once. He grimaced in frustration at our ignorance about the burial of kin and said, "But you two can never be buried with her. There's no space for you as a family." "What if she's alone?" I said, as an unanswerable question. "It's here, Jenny. This is where she has to be buried." Raised to be polite, our arguments were subtle, submerged, molten like the landscape, constant pressure yet inseparably bound. Brian had always cherished authority, and I'd come to question it. But convinced by Brian and their shared underlying belief in the act of certainty, the man said, "I'll get the backhoe." I'd slept in Mom's bed the night before to be near her, to keep something of her. The scent of roses and tea and skin-softening night cream. Small things become everything when someone dies. I read her journals. Forgive me, I know, I did. She wrote this about Thanksgiving, her last one. At dinner, Jenny told me a story about a panther that lost her paw when she put it through a fence at a wildlife sanctuary. The owners thought the panther should have known better than to stick her paw in where the lions were feeding. Can't stop thinking about that poor panther. I've been so sad about it. I hope this is my last Thanksgiving. She'd raised us with a depth of optimism that used to annoy me, having been a sensitive child. Her words laid hard on that page. She wrote other things, too, that I hadn't known or imagined resided in her. I shared the faith Brian had in the landscape to provide solace and sanctuary, but I worried about the ghosts and demons she'd have to navigate on her own, because she'd been fighting them all her life. When would she have peace? How could I live without her, and how could I live with myself? I told my mother a sad story that made her wish for death on a page of her private thoughts.
I really did hear your voice when I read, I know.
Thanks.
Like, I read them, I know.
Yeah. That was a huge component, though, of the writing itself, trying to talk about her secrets without telling all her secrets, because I don't have a right to tell them all. And there were times in the writing there people would say, what were her secrets? And I just didn't feel right about it, but I wanted everybody to know I read them. I knew something more about what was going on in her inner life. And yes, when we write in journals, sometimes we write in hyperbole, for sure. Who doesn't? You know, woe is me is what journals are for. But she definitely had some things that were working on her and hurting her that I didn't know. And reading them was a gift from her that I'm pretty sure she didn't want to give me. She didn't want me to have it. But I'm really grateful to have that information, you know, from her side. So.
Do you ever think about what's going to happen after you pass and your daughter reads your journals?
So, yes, I think about it, and I think we're dead, so we don't have any stake in, you know, in all of these things anymore. And I think it is a gift. I mean, people can take what you write in a lot of different ways. My brother and I have access to some of these journals together, and our interpretations are, of course, very different, and our actions regarding them is different. And I'm going to write a lot more about that in the next book, but this one I wanted. Yeah, so yes, if my daughter reads my journals, I'm going to have to just deal with that. But I don't think about it. I don't think about her reading them, because if I do that, then I'm not writing my story. So.
And it just feels like when you set this up in the beginning mm-hmm. of the book, that I kept thinking as a reader about death, really, just sure. what death is. But I also thought that you think about it in sharp relief to what life is mm-hmm. and taking us mostly chronologically through the story of your life, it still felt like we're not seeing things just as they are. You did put that analysis of looking through this lens of time.
Sure. I did. And the trick of it for me was keeping the reader aware of what was happening in the moment and how I was seeing it, but without being too telling. I didn't want to tell. I wanted to show. I wanted it to be literary. And at first, you know, when I was becoming this writer, I wasn't aware of so many things with regard to how literature works. I'd read books, of course. I was a big reader as a young person, thank goodness, right? But taking the events and analyzing them and turning them into a piece of art was itself just an extraordinary experience. Like, I'm really glad that I had, this is my MFA. You know, this project was, I think, what you get when you get an MFA. I don't know, but it feels very much like when I went to a Tin House and they had the language of the MFA, and I got to have that experience for a week with people who knew literature backwards and forwards and art backwards and forwards, and to have them put language and vocabulary to what I'd been doing, to what I'd already been doing, really helped.
I like that in that way, you don't need to devalue MFAs to talk about yourself and your way of writing. I love that about it. Like, you're not, everyone has their process and this is how they became a writer.
Uh-huh. And their path. You know, we all have a different way to get there, and I think it takes a different amount of time, and I think it takes different lessons, and you know, I'm sure people have their strong opinions about what should happen, but this is what happened for me.
And this is also good to know, even before you get started. You did take us to the beginning, but you also had somewhat of a preface that I'm going to read right now. Just starting in the beginning, before you even get started, let's say. So you start at the beginning, but this is before the beginning.
Right. Well, this is my CYA, too.
Yeah?
It's kind of, yeah. Go ahead and read it.
Memory is a tricky thing, but memoir is straightforward. I gathered memories to create a narrative arc that seeks to tell, and this is in capital, the truth. As the writer of this book, I took liberties with my memories and the timeline of events to create a narrative. Some names have been changed, but most haven't. And I will ask about that. Identities are the ones I've projected onto the various characters of my life story. If anyone recognizes themselves in this story, they would do well to remember that I'm using them in this way and that their lives are much bigger than any one story could contain. Mm. And let me tell you, when I read that, and we can't even say, I think we can't say what's CYA stands for, but we know what it is.
Yeah.
But we know. Mm-hmm. So when I thought about this, I thought this was a warning, but it wasn't. I thought that you were still giving people respect,
yeah,
and letting them know that you acknowledge that their life means more than what a chapter in a book could ever do justice to them.
Absolutely. No, you're right. I'm being you know, a little flippant, a little snarky, but it started as a CYA, and then I had more to say. As usual, I start with one motivation, and then I get to a better place and a more expansive place. I have to write my way there. But yes, I definitely wanted my brother to know. So it's not that I just wanted him to know that I think the world of him still. It's that I want other people to create in their minds, like the reader, I want them to have a relationship with all of these people in a real expansive way, because politically, there's some really awful things that people, you know, that are happening with all of the characters in this book. And I don't want some reader to look at Paul and vilify him. And because I just don't. I don't want someone to look at my brother and put everything that's wrong politically on him. He is part of it, as I am, as many other characters in the books, in the book, but we're just one person, and I wanted the reader to make sure they went in with that.
And I think it definitely comes through when you read through it. It's a different experience. I always feel like not only is every book different, mm-hmm. every memoir is different, everyone is going to have their different ways of constructing the stories of their lives, but I like to bring attention to how you've been making that transparent from the beginning by letting people know, no, look, I am not the wizard hiding this from you. Look, I'm taking down the curtain. These are characters. There's narratives. There's an arc. You're not, yes, they are people, but you're not calling them people. You did say characters. Right. And I think for the most part, when we're reading memoirs, we're reading characters. We're not reading the people.
How can we? I can only know so much. As I said, you can only know so much. I can know a person for 30 years and never completely know them. I mean, that's the beautiful and really hard thing about being a person in relationship with other people. You can't know them. But in literature, the idea is to interact with metaphor. And so you're not just a character, you're a metaphor. So hopefully I created that for every character as a metaphor.
This is a really good opportunity for us to take a break since this is the membership drive. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about Jenny Forrester's first book, her memoir, Narrow River, Wide Sky.
Thank you so much. This is Lynn. I'm here with my friend Ken Jones, and we are listening to this great, I love, this is one of my favorite shows on KABU,
Between the covers.
You do many of them, Ken Jones.
Yeah, I do a few of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm actually a character and a metaphor, so I just want to clarify that first.
It's also, so we are not just speaking about Jenny Forrester's first book, Narrow River, A Wide Sky. It's there's a great discussion about memoir in this, which is always very topical. You know, no one has decided what memoir is, I don't think.
It's a very popular genre now, but there's not any one way of doing it.
Right. I mean, ask Lillian Hellman, but that's another story. it can be a good story, and that's it. But because this is the kind of wonderful programming that we give you at KABU, and now we are asking you to give back in monetary terms by calling 877-500-5266.
And if you call now, we actually have, thanks to Jenny Forrester and also to the publisher of Narrow River, Wide Sky, Hawthorne Books, and the wonderful Rhonda Hughes, who is the jack of all trades, the publisher at Hawthorne Books, and a great, valuable asset to the Portland literary community.
Yeah.
We actually have copies of the book for you. Not only that, but we'll throw in a CD of the interview that you're hearing today. So the entire interview with Pamela Santos, she's asking the questions for Jenny Forrester. That's for a minimum pledge of $75 a year. $6.50 a month. That's our sustaining membership that we've been pushing quite a bit today. It helps KABU kind of determine our budget for the year. It's somewhat painless for you, setting up your automatic payments. You could do that with credit card, debit card, EFT, electronic funds transfer. Just give us
our
a call.
Our phone answers will take you through it in minutes.
In minutes. Maybe two, maybe three.
Three at the outside.
We could try for the record, but you can give them a call now at 877-500-5266 or go online at kabu.fm and click on the donate button. And now back to Narrow River, Wide Sky and the author, Jenny Forrester.
And we're back. You're listening to Between the Covers. And thank you so much for supporting KABU Radio during our spring membership drive. And with us today, we have been talking with Jenny Forrester about her memoir, Narrow River, Wide Sky. And some of the talk that we've had is talking about what it's like to adapt not only, I would say, your life, but it's almost this constellation of lives. Mm-hmm. And how did you make the decision to construct the way that you did this constellation?
The characters are the people who've been the most important to me, but I also needed to make the town a character, and so I had to bring in the characters of the town, and then I had to make the landscape its own character. So there were a lot of mountain ranges and different skies that go into creating the landscape character. And maybe there are multiple landscape characters, but that was my motive. That's what I wanted to do, is I wanted to create a story that is not just me, but is my whole human experience with other people and the landscape and the places I've lived. And I just wanted it to be really big. I wanted it to be this encompassing, beautiful thing, and I wanted it to be about Western America. And so that's a big thing, right?
No, it is.
Many states.
And I think you touched on the different parts of how you grew up in mainly Western Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
But there is this kind of American West that lives in the imagination. And it certainly lives for me, because I have a lot of romanticism around that. I'm from New York City. And all of the things that I absorbed in popular culture about cowboys, about just everything, you know, like all of these different aspects of what I picture to be these are the required characteristics of the American West.
Right.
And I had not really taken in either enough books or enough other kinds of stories where people are highlighting, you know, really real things that happen when you grow up in a town of 800 people.
Right. I wanted to show the mythology that is what you're talking about from New York City, and the people who live there also have this mythology, and we created it and recreated it as we went along. But it was definitely important that we were pioneers, that we saw ourselves as pioneers. That was just a string that kind of created the whole fabric, you know, back and forth, weaving back and forth, and just creating all of that energy around that. And yet, you know, when you look at my life starting in Minturn back in the 60s, the mining towns that I wanted to talk about gentrification without using that word.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens in rural areas, and we don't talk about that. We talk about gentrification in the urban areas. We don't talk about the gentrification of rural areas. And so I wanted to show that, because it unravels that mythology really nicely.
Judy?
You're listening to Between the Covers on KBOO Community Radio, and that's an interview right now. We'll take it up till noon. Narrow River, Wide Sky, a memoir by Jenny Forrester, published by Portland's own Hawthorne Books. I'm Ken. I'm with my partner, Lynn, here. I'm the character. She's the metaphor. And we're here to ask you to support KBOO during our spring membership drive. Give us a call, 877-500-5266. And Lynn, we've got some nice gifts for people who call.
Absolutely. This lovely book, Narrow River, Wide Sky by Jenny Forrester, the book and the interview are a great value for $75 contribution. That's $6.50 a month. just for you, dear listener, so you can read this amazing piece of literature and also hear this interview again, because they're talking about a lot of big, wide subjects here, and I like that. We have time to do that on KBOO. We don't have like just little 10-minute soundbite things, and everybody here reads the book, and Ken knows, because Ken has done quite a few between the covers.
Yeah, a few of them. One of the things I've noticed when I prepare for an interview, I listen to any interviews that are available on the internet of the author that's coming in. Some of them are on radio shows. A lot of them are on kind of the morning television programs that are a little lame, but I think
questions the publishers give you a list of.
Exactly.
So you will ask them. That sort of thing happens. 877-500-5266. Go on.
But what I notice is, and I can guarantee the people who do Between the Covers, there's about 7 or 8 of us who are hosts, actually read the book. And I don't get that from other interviews with the authors. So you'd figure that would be a basic.
People are usually surprised. The authors are quite generally surprised many times and have said, I've had that said, you read the book? And I'm like, well, yeah, because how else would I interview? But that's, some people seem to be able to not have that problem. 877-500-5266.
And we're very fortunate to have Powell's in town, Lynn. So we get a lot of authors coming, big names, and also first-time novelists, people who are writing memoirs and nonfiction. And stop off at KBOO is usually kind of de rigueur on the author's tour. And we get a chance to talk to them in studio, in depth, about the book.
Right.
Yeah, and as you can see today with Jenny Forrester, Pamela's interview with Jenny Forrester on Narrow River, Wide Sky. So if that's important to you, if you're a book person, I know I am, and you want to support programming like this, give us a call at 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm and keep programs.
As Carl from Beaverton contributed online, you too, kboo.fm, it can be done, 877-500-5266. Call in now. We need a few calls for the show. That would be really great if we could have 10 people. We would really, really appreciate that at $75. $75 for a year for $6.50 a month. Then you too can pick up Jenny Forrester, Jenny Forrester's book, Narrow River, Wide Sky. I love even the name. The vision of that is really
nice.
Yeah,
that kind of Colorado landscape. But it's a very moving interview. Lynn and I were talking about that while we were listening. And I'm sure it's a very moving memoir. I haven't read it yet, but it's on my list now.
Right. And it can be on yours, too. In fact, it can be in your home, dear listener. 877-500-5266 for a $75 minimum contribution. That's $6.50. That's a mere $6.50 a month. You, too, may have Jenny Forrester's new and, I believe, first memoir. It's called a memoir. Okay,
yeah.
Good. Narrow River, Wide Sky. And you also get to have this very interesting conversation with Pamela that she's having with host Pamela Santos right now. So 877-500-5266. We've still got a little time in the break left. You may call. We'll get it all done, and then you can go back to listening to the interview.
In fact, if you want, call up if you want to become a new member or increase your membership. Let us know what authors you'd like us to interview. I know there's quite a few of us, as I mentioned, about 7 or 8, and we all have different interests. I know last week, David Naiman, who does a lot of wonderful Between the Covers interviews, interviewed Jeff Vandermeer, science fiction writer who was in Portland. That's yet to be broadcast. He has a new book called Born, B-O-R-N-E, Sunday, for a wonderful guy I interviewed before, Cory Doctorow, who writes both science fiction, young adult novels, and nonfiction. He was in town just briefly. He came up from Seattle that morning. He read to Powell's that night, and he was gone the next day. I interviewed him on Sunday morning, and that will be broadcast, too. He has a new science fiction novel called Walk Away. So that's the kind of things you hear on Between the Covers, and there's really nothing like that in Portland. It's not the 5-10 minutes that you're going to get on Think Out Loud or an ABC morning show, anything like that. It's an in-depth interview, and the authors just love it, coming in and talking to readers like you. Very literate audience that we have at KBOO. So give us a call now. Keep this programming supported. 877-500-5266. Back to Between the Covers.
So a lot of your book is very tightly woven vignettes. Mm-hmm. I got used to it really quickly. I want to say that first chapter. Got used to it very quickly that I was, if I was watching a movie of your life, it would fast forward mm-hmm. from moment to moment to moment. And you would have different friends pop in, pop out, pop in, pop out. And like an early friend, childhood friend, was telling stories about, and I had this in here, just this idea of other people and that she had to be better than other people. Mm. And that's what I was thinking about when you're talking about gentrification and you're talking about the different ways that people occupy space and then they can't occupy it anymore.
Right.
And then it's always this idea of, but you have to be better than somebody. Also, it's class too.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And some of it is real as far as like you can get out if you're good enough at football. Like there's a Mancus football player. He went to the Denver Broncos, won. But you know, one person made it. And so there's that mythology. If you're good enough at something, you'll get out. Or just if you're better, you have a better story.
Could you be better and stay?
I don't know. That's something that I've thought about. Like, what if I never left Mancus? Would I still have? No, I couldn't have written this book. Right? I couldn't have come to this. So I don't know.
And I think it's really obvious. I took so many notes, by the way, of all the different places, because I'm like, this is all blending for me. Let me do this. Wait. Mm-hmm. But I think the biggest takeaway that I had, so you're talking about leaving or not leaving.
Right.
And I think about if towns were still characters, that's why you have created these metaphors of leaving people also,
yeah.
or not leaving people.
Right. And if we take that to that highest level of this is America, leaving, not leaving, we're not necessarily going to leave the landscape because we're, you know, human beings, we need to live on this landscape. But what do we take? What is good? How do we leave? What is wrong? How do we do all of those things and not destroy human beings and landscapes? How do we navigate all of this with our need for our stories?
And when you're navigating, frankly, it was, I'm still thinking about these different lines. It was Mancos. I'm pretty sure that it was your brother called the people in it the few, the prideful, the related. It's not quite the good, the bad, and the ugly, but right. It feels right. Actually. It's these moments that made me think about it as cinematic as well. Like I'm hearing this, and yeah, that's what it's like.
There are all these. There's all this politicking, right? Who belongs, who doesn't belong, how long do you need to be in a place to belong, how do you determine how somebody is kicked out, and so the few, the prideful, the related had a lot to do with that, who belongs, who doesn't belong.
And I think you needed that time and distance, right? From especially the yes. early parts to be able to really look. And I say not negative Nelly, like, but the critical eye of being able to see what was there that you didn't see when you were living it. So a lot of the different, like I said, the different vignettes, when you're a child, you're picking up on sexism. You're picking up on racism. You're absolutely, like, throughout the whole in all these different parts, picking up on classism, mm-hmm. when you're going from the experience of living in a house versus a trailer versus the different kinds of trailers too,
right?
The single wide and the double wide,
right?
And who sees you, mm-hmm. not living in a house or living in a house,
right? Right, and the trailer park versus the lone trailer, and on the side of the highway or in a field, you know, there was always an awareness of where we were, where we sat. And as far as the distance, for the critical eye to be able to use it, I think I was one of those kids who was always like, why is that? Why is that? And I was always really opinionated, whether I was right or wrong. And so I think I always had that component that was always there. But I think to write it in the way that I was eventually did take also safety, the safety from that town, the distance from that town, to be able to say what I needed to say.
Because you did talk in different parts of it, but especially towards the end, about the ideas of going back,
mm-hmm.
and what does it mean to go back?
Right. Well, and, you know, I don't think I could ever go back to Mancos, but I could go back to Colorado. There's a lot more people there now, and it's a different place. As you read, we can't give away the ending because it's so good. Thanks to my brother for making that last line just pop.
I know the line that you speak of, and there's a part of me that, for a lot of the conversations that I have with authors, I really need that line. I need the lines. But there were so many parts in this where I laughed out loud. And I think it was actually a little bit because I needed some relief too.
Yeah. There's an intensity to the emotion that I couldn't really get away from. And, you know, I think of myself as a funny person, but I couldn't write the book like as a, it's not a humorous comedy. It's definitely a tragedy. And there can be comedic elements, but there's just that intensity. And I think my brother has a really good sense of humor. And I don't think he meant that line that we're talking about humorously, but at the same time, he can do that. He can bring humor to situations. And so he was always...
It's like a hoodie thing.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO, and I'm Lynn. I'm here with my friend Ken Jones in the show, What Now is Between the Covers. And Pamela Santos is interviewing Jenny Forrester. Narrow River, Wide Sky is her memoir. And this just sounds, I'm so glad we got to take so long for this. Really fascinating. They're discussing, you know, memoir. What is memoir? They're all, this is a great interview. And you can get a copy of this interview and a copy of Jenny Forrester's book, Narrow River, Wide Sky, for a mere $75 contribution. That's $6.50 a month. If you call in now at 877-500-5266. And Ken, it's hoodie day too, right?
It's amazing. The hoodies are flying off the shelf. We've gone about six or seven of them since we've been in at 9 o'clock, and that's for a minimum pledge of $25 a month, Lynn. We want to thank Bruce from Salem. He called up and he pledged that $25 a month and got the KBOO hoodie. It's not a chintzy hoodie.
We've established that this morning.
It will last a long time. It's perfect for weather like today, a little cool but sunny and dry.
In fact, someone came in and claimed their hoodie and said, "You're right. It is not chintzy." So it's the perfect weather.
We have an endorsement.
To have a wonderful KBOO hoodie and also get this book For the hoodie for a $25 a month contribution, 877-500-5266. Or this amazing book by Jenny Forrester, Narrow River, Wide Sky, and the interview that she is doing now with Pamela, Cabo's own Pamela Santos. So,
yeah, great interview. Very, yeah. Very moving. And I should add also that Jenny's book is published by Hawthorne Books. So it's a totally
local.
Portland production here. Rhonda Hughes is the publisher there, and they're just you know, a real asset to the whole literary community here. So Portland is a book town with Powell's, with Hawthorne Books.
And it's a community radio station, Pound. So step, town. So step up. 877-500-5266. And now back to Between the Covers.
I also think that as we were looking, you really couldn't just like turn your eyes away from gender differences. Your mother sounded like the most intelligent, worldly woman from these pages.
And she was. She definitely was. And when I was a teenager, I thought, why does she live here? Why? But she never left. She wanted to ski. She wanted that Colorado ski bum dream. Even in her 50s, when she went back, she prided herself on being able to. She lived closer to the Vail Mountain, where she originally went. And she wanted that, so she put up with a lot of the difficulties around living in a rural place without the metropolitan advantages of arts and museums, which she loved. Obviously, she was well read and intelligent. And without too many spoilers, and then later she was able to travel a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It was. Not much.
She seemed to me like the girl sidekick in movies that somebody had to do something. And yet she was at the heart of the action. So she would be at, and this is really still hard for me to say this sentence, archaeological digs.
Yes, I know.
Because I grew up loving Indiana Jones movies, even the young Indiana Jones TV show, and looking at this and thinking to myself, well, I'm in the modern era. Too bad I'm in the modern era and I missed out on archaeological digs and I don't get to be Indiana.
Yeah, they do a lot of satellite imaging now. So they know where things are. And it's kind of transformed the technology and the destruction of sites that are obviously sacred. But I don't know about the practices, and I still don't know how much of the I don't know all the words, but the racism that science. Anthropology, archaeology really showed itself to be when I was at those dig sites. I was very little, but I picked up on it.
You picked up on a lot.
For sure.
And a lot of it was what your mother, or the adults, I would say, in your life wanted to tell you, but also what they were showing you. Because your mother seemed to want to show you how to be a good person.
Yeah.
And the thing is, living life, you're harder on yourself. Like, if you take the lesson of just being a good person, but how can you be good when you're not supposed to sin?
Right. Yeah, there are a lot of requirements.
Yes.
To be good.
It's a whole book. It's the good book.
Yeah. Yeah, we had two books. We had a variety of patriarchal requirements, like lists, We had like three different lists that showed us how it was to be good and a good woman. So there was, you know, probably more lists for that. But I think my mom definitely was always wanting to be as aware as possible and to be good as possible. But she was also very human. And in reading her journals and in the private conversations that we had of, you know, when we started telling each other secrets, she was a much more complete person. And that, I think, was really hard for her because we're supposed to be good, not complete. We're supposed to be good according to this. This is what we want to be. It's patriarchy. Patriarchy telling us exactly what we should be. And I wanted to show that and talk about feminism without using the word feminism often or in a way that, I just saw this, The Onion put out this video. It's brilliant about, and I'm getting back to it, but it's about a guy from a small steel town in Pennsylvania. He's talking about, he's sorry he voted for number 45, but since then he's read queer feminist theory and now he knows better. And so it's brilliant. If you haven't seen it, it's so both sides can say, you know, the number 45 side can say, well, see how silly you all sound. And then the side where I stand can say, see, all you all needed was some information. And it's brilliant because both sides can do that. And you can also see how we're not communicating something important. We're not able to communicate. We're using different expectations. I wanted to write this book so that without using those words, but showing a different perspective.
I think people need to be able to read the situations. I think a lot of what can be hard, perhaps, in really understanding human nature is if you can't read a situation, if you can't read things as they're happening. And when you're talking about showing, you are showing things in the way that when your brother says something about senators and women's rights, folks, and watching the TV.
Right.
And, oh my gosh, the fragile problems.
Yes.
And angry women.
Yes, yes. And it hasn't changed. It hasn't timed itself out. You know, the time it took to live it and the time it took to write it, these things are still applicable, and they're even more. So the people I write with, as I wrote, would think this is archaic. This is not how it is anymore. And it, because we had this lull in urban life, I guess, or maybe it's just, you know, the people I was, you know, the West Coast urban life that I've been living has been really different than the life I lived in Western Colorado, in small town Western Colorado. And so to have that small town come onto the national stage in such a way, this hasn't gone out of style. It hasn't gone out of vogue.
No.
It hasn't gone, it's not unimportant because it's aged.
I'm so glad that we got through this interview with no tears between us.
I know, me too. Neither of us cried. There were a couple little, pools, but we got through it.
No, I mean, when people read the book, they're going to be reading lots of crying Jenny. But here, we didn't have crying Jenny.
No, but tomorrow, when I do the book launch, I'm definitely going to cry.
Such a pleasure. I am wishing you the best.
Thank you.
And yeah, there's a lot of love here.
Thank you. Same to you.
Okay.
Bye. Hi. That was the end of that interview, and now we are here. I'm Lynn. I'm here with Ken, and we're going to give you ways to contribute to this amazing radio station, which is KBOO.
Oh, really?
First of all, here's the phone number, 877-500-5266. Or you can donate online, kboo.fm. And you can get, this was an interview that Pamela Santos did with the author of Narrow River, Wide Sky, a memoir, Jenny Forrester. You can get the book and the interview. A great value for a $75 minimum contribution. That's $6.50 a month. You can do that by calling 877-500-5266. And we're pretty close to our goal here, so a few more calls. And, excuse me, we'll make it. And you know we want to keep ourselves on target so that we reach our goal of $130,000 at the end of this membership drive, that it will be successful. It will be successful because of you, dear listener. That's why, and that's why you're going to call 877-500-5266.
Lynn, it was a very powerful and moving interview. I know a lot of people listening to it must be thinking about how they can get the book, or they've just reserved it in the library. But a very easy way: you're supporting KBOO, you get the book.
It's a twofer, I tell you.
And a CD of the interview itself, if you'd like to listen again, by calling us at 877-500-5266 and pledging $6.50 a month. Minimum pledge is $6.50 a month, $75
a year. $75 for the year.
Yeah, the book and the CD. And that also, of course, helps support KBOO programming like that, Between the Covers, where we have a lot of authors we talked about coming into Powell's, and they also come in as part of their tour, coming into KBOO and doing interviews with us. Always a little bit more in-depth, maybe a lot more in-depth than you'll get anywhere else.
And Feed Your Head, Feed the Station.
Mm-hmm.
It's an easy way to do it is to call 877-500-5266 and get your copy of Narrow River, Wide Sky by Jenny Forrester, and then also get a copy of the interview she just did with Pamela Santos. Sounds like a lovely way to start your spring out, I tell you.
Yeah, I was mentioning how big a book town we have.
Of
course, with Powell's Books and Between the Covers, but also publishers like the publisher of Narrow River, Wide Sky, Hawthorne Books, and Rhonda Hughes is the owner, proprietor there. And Lynn also mentioned that we're a community radio town, and how rare a station like KBOO is across the country. I mean, there's a lot of good stations. We were talking about WOZ.
WWOZ in New Orleans.
In New Orleans.
They don't do news and public
almost
affairs.
All music, yeah. Seattle, they consider themselves superior to Portland, but they have absolutely nothing like KBOO. They have a good station, KEXP, but that's all music. Again, no news and public affairs. So KBOO really is somewhat unique. There might be stations like at Berkeley, New York.
Well, there's the Pacific
LA.
Stations.
Right, but that's
Pacific
about
stations.
It.
Right. And it's entirely, David Barsamian was here earlier this week talking about how he goes throughout the country and how what a rare, beautiful gem KBOO is and how important it is to contribute to the community radio revolution. 877-500-5266. Contribute to being able to hear the truth in the middle of the most audacious spin in my that I've ever experienced in my lifetime. 877, and that's a few years, folks.
Right. 877. Nothing like it.
Nothing like it. 877-500-5266 or kboo.fm.
Yeah, and Lynn mentioned David Barsamian, who was here the other day. This morning we had Sean King, who's a big fan of the station, a big proponent. We had Greg Pallas last week.
We had Chris Hedges.
Amy Goodman, of course, every weekday at 7 a.m. and 4 p.m. And Amy was in town last Saturday. She was talking at Powell's in Cedar Hills. They're all big fans of KBOO, as we are of them. They're bringing us the truth and KBOO is the medium to get that truth to you. So we're kind of the middleman here, the middle person, I should say.
We're a conduit.
A conduit.
A conduit of information.
I also consider us a hub. We're kind
Absolutely.
Of connecting different activist groups in the community, and that's all because of listeners like you who give about 67% of our operating budget a year comes from people like you. Give us a call now. Become one of them if you haven't been a member before. You've been listening for a while. You've been thinking about it. Now's the exact right time to call. If you are a member, it might be time to renew or increase your membership. 877-500-5266.
It's essentially the right, perfect time to do it right now. 877-500-5266. Coming up pretty soon is
Shocks of Sheba
Shocks of
with
Sheba.
Michelle and Teresa.
And that'll be really fun afternoon radio to be doing your gardening to. I think that sounds really good. 877-500-5266. But make the call now, and then you can go out and be listening to Michelle and Teresa's music. And
oh, it's a perfect day for reggae, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, absolutely. Perfect day for reggae. And perfect day to call in to KBOO, 877-500-5266. Like we said, this was unintentional hoodie morning, but, you know. You
oh, can we mention the hoodie offer one more time?
Certainly.
It's been extremely popular. It's not chintzy. Lynn, so it's $25 a month as a sustaining
right.
member of KBOO. Get you that beautiful black hoodie. It's not chintzy, as we said. It's great quality, perfect for a day like today.
Great
little cool,
KBOO.
But sunny.
Great subversive KBOO logo on it.
Right.
Love it.
Show your subversion out there on the street. Just give us a call at 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm. And now Shocks of Sheba with Michelle and Teresa.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20